Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We switch gears to talk some Tennessee Volunteers football, specifically Jeremy Pruitt, with David Ubben of The Athletic. David, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Anytime, guys. Thanks.
David, once upon a time, you were a blogging pioneer as ESPN launched the big NFL and college football blogs and told us we were revolutionaries at a big summit meeting. It was glorious for a time. The Athletic is another new pioneering thing, and I'm wondering what the start of that has felt like compared to back at ESPN in 2008 or 2009.
Well, I like to joke about it. I tried to not do anything that would bring the ESPN black helicopters down on me, but I it's a lot better. I think the quality of life is better, but you're calling us a revolutionary, Paul. You've revolutionized quite a bit on your own, but I think the entire model of sports journalism is changing, and I think if you can find a niche that people enjoy, I think it's clear that people are understanding, hey, you know, if we don't support these kinds of things, whether it's your project or whether it's The Athletic or whatever it is, they're not going to exist. The ad model is kind of breaking down, and so it's been great to sort of be a part of that and be able to do some good work and be able to be supported and have time to do things that we're proud of. So it's been fantastic.
David Ubben covers the Tennessee Vols for The Athletic. Some great stuff on the site, and a really good four-part series on Jeremy Pruitt, sort of behind the scenes of his entire life leading up to him getting the job at Tennessee. And David, Jeremy Pruitt has been notoriously kind of tight-lipped with the media and with access in his time at Tennessee. But you get him on the record with some of these stories going back in his past. Was it difficult to get him to open up about some of these things? What was that process like of getting him to go back and talk about his past?
No, I think here's the thing with Jeremy. He's not going to volunteer information, but if you ask him directly about stuff, he's usually pretty good. It was good to sort of get to know, you know, the point of the series was basically, hey, who is this guy? You know, Alabama folks are familiar with him, but yeah, he's not going to volunteer that much information. He's not a big talker. He's not a huge personality, and Tennessee fans didn't know that much about him at all. So, you know, who is this guy is a simple question with a complicated answer, and we sort of set out to answer that. And I'm really happy with what we've been able to do so far. We've got part five coming later this week on his coaching career, including we'll get into a lot of sort of what happened at Georgia. I think fans will appreciate that. So yeah, it'll ultimately be six parts, and we're still going as the season sort of creeps a little bit closer.
Well, that's it. So more to look forward to. Four parts are out right now. I want to go back to part one, though. The influencer, Jeremy Pruitt, brings Rainesville to Tennessee and Tennessee to Rainesville. So much of what Jeremy Pruitt is today was shaped by growing up with his dad in the household, a high school football coach, in that small town in northern Alabama where he's from. What was the biggest takeaway about his upbringing as you put together that first part of this piece?
Well, I think two things. I think number one, you know, there's a natural prejudice, I think, from people when you talk about small town folks, small town America, people that, you know, maybe when they talk, their grammar's not the greatest. They talk a little slower. There's a twang in their voice. I think sometimes people judge a book by its cover and sort of say, well, that person is less intelligent than you know, another person who might, you know, present themselves in a more, like, polished fashion, or somebody that has a British accent or something. You know, and I think that Jeremy Pruitt, you know, he kind of taps into that. He's very aware of that. And I think tapping into some of his roots and sort of explaining, hey, you know, this is sort of why this guy is there and why some of these things don't apply to him and the people that are around him. And then also, you know, people talk about, oh, well, you know, he's a coach's son and he's going to be a good coach and this and that. But I wanted to get into sort of, okay, well, what are the dynamics and what are the sort of lifestyle things that make that an environment that sort of breeds another coach? I mean, his middle sister is a elementary school teacher even, and his brother's a coach. his dad tried his hardest to get him out of coaching, and it didn't work. Their whole family sort of went into that business. And so sort of trying to explain, hey, this is why these things happen. This is how these things happen. And that was sort of the purpose of that piece and sort of explaining that he still feels a pull back to his hometown.
Full disclosure here, David, I actually own Two-A-Days on DVD. So I watched the MTV show live, and I actually owned it on DVD, and I've seen every episode, and I loved it and loved the premise when it came out. Jeremy Pruitt's a pretty big part of that as the new defensive coordinator at Hoover High School when that show was shot. You actually uncovered a health scare that he had the night before they were set to play Tim Tebow in his high school team in the season opener. What can you tell us about that?
I did, yeah. Basically, his blood pressure just completely spiked. They were, the very first game he had at Hoover, it was not quite as serious, and I think they were worried that it was at the time. I think the number that Rush Probst told me was like it was 170 over 110, which is sort of like you should probably seek medical attention, but they weren't sure what was happening. But he was kind of just freaking out a little bit, and they had to get the paramedics up to his room and give him some attention. But, they won that game the next day, and it sort of kick-started his career. But, yeah, Two-A-Days, I think I've aged out of the target demographic for that show, but I do count it as one of the greatest expense reports of my life. That's that $13 off of Amazon for the Two-A-Days DVD. It was interesting.
Well, in part three about this was his days as a player, and of course played college ball here locally at MTSU for a time. You got Boots Donnelly on the record about him. What did you learn about Jeremy Pruitt, the football player?
I mean, I think it's that Jeremy Pruitt, the football player, was always kind of Jeremy Pruitt, the coach. I spent a week in Rainesville talking to a lot of people, guys that played with him in high school and college. Talked to people that played with him in college, and he was sort of always a teacher, and he always sort of had that sort of sixth sense on the football field. One of the guys that he played with in high school and college, Phil Jackson, was like, yeah, he'd be, running around before the play. He'd see one guy in motion, and he'd know exactly what the play was. He'd be calling it out, yelling it to everybody, and sure enough, they'd run that play, and that'd be exactly what was coming. And, he's only one guy on the field with 11, so it's not like he's, able to completely predict everything that happens, but he can get guys tipped off, and he's always just sort of had a natural sort of propensity for understanding defense and understanding how to stop various offenses, and has some great instincts that have helped him as a player and now obviously have pushed his career forward as a coach.
David, For those that haven't read the piece, give the story, if you don't mind, of him getting knocked out unconscious in high school.
Yeah, he scared some people. I tried to hit on this in the story, but 1990, when it came to head injuries, was a different era, to say the least. That was three decades ago. But basically, he got hit on a blindside block, got a helmet right to his ear hole, and he was out for several minutes. And there was sort of some divergent stories of when he got back up, but he was out for a long time and had a pretty serious concussion. But sure enough, he kind of took it easy in practice that week, but he was out playing again the next week. He suffered a lot of injuries. When you're a two-way player playing every snap at 180 pounds in high school, that's going to happen. But he was the kind of guy who's going to sort of lie about his injuries and say, no, I'm fine, I'm fine. I can do fine. I can be fine. I can play. And he did play. He played through a lot, but specifically that injury, I mean, people thought he was dead, legitimately thought he was dead. He was just out motionless for several minutes. It ended up he just had a pretty serious concussion, but a different era of football for sure.
David, Jeremy Pruitt did not play a whole lot when he transferred to Alabama, but he learned quite a bit. What did he carry over from that experience that helps him now?
I mean, I think it's just understanding defenses and understanding, at a larger than rudimentary level. I mean, he was never a guy that sort of just understood his role. That was one of the things he really helped sort of mentor Kevin Jackson, who was an All-American at his position. And one of the biggest things that he taught him was sort of understanding his role as one of 11, understanding the entire defense. And he had enough impact that, after, Bill Oliver left and Mike DuBose came on as defensive coordinator, in his second year, when Mike DuBose took over as head coach, he made him a GA, like, immediately. And when he was a GA, he learned even more working with DuBose. Ellis Johnson was on that staff. And when he went back to Alabama to coach high schools, I mean, they were really, really advanced in what they were doing because of what he had learned and because he had been such an integral part in some just different kinds of things than you're going to find in a lot of high schools in Alabama. And again, that sort of set him on the course for, an upward trajectory for the rest of his career.
You know, I don't often plan on reading about coaches and weight loss when you read a piece, but you've got a lengthy part on this, on Jeremy Pruitt gaining weight right after his playing days, and now sort of the fight to keep that weight off as he's been coaching all these years.
Yeah, he was always a big eater. He was kind of forthright about that, and he told me that a coach had told him, he could never really gain weight. He was always around 180, 185. And I talk about this in the piece, but Jeremy told me, a coach that he had told him, hey, if you, as soon as you get done playing, you're going to be like 225 pounds. And Jeremy told me, he was wrong. I was 250. He put on like 70 pounds in about 2 years. And he kind of realized, hey, I got to make some changes. And, I think the people around him that I talked to in Rainsville about it, I think the thing that they took away from it was sort of that when he sets his mind to kind of do something, he's going to do it. And that applied to, mostly football things, but in this case it applied to his health, and he dropped that weight and got back and ate a little bit healthy, and he certainly still likes to eat, but he's a lot healthier than he was back in his playing days and certainly right after that.
David Ubben, he's with The Athletic. You can read four parts of those six parts in the series on Jeremy Pruitt, the other two still yet to drop, but all that is at The Athletic right now. Let's talk about this team. It's been hard for us to handicap Keller Criss versus Jarrett Garantano going into this season. When covering this team and kind of seeing their interaction with their teammates, how would you handicap that quarterback race right now?
Well, I look at it this way. Jeremy Pruitt is a defensive coach, and he wants to make sure that his defense is not put in difficult positions. That's the simplest way that he's going to be approaching offense. He wants to score every time, but he wants to run the ball. He wants to control the clock just as badly as he wants to score. So if you're looking at a guy that, you don't want to put your defense in bad positions, you've got a second, you've got a third-year sophomore in Jarrett Garantano, who played, six, seven games last year, and you've got Keller Criss, a guy who's been around the block a lot. I would lean Criss because I think he's the guy who's not going to make that big mistake. He's not the guy that's going to turn the ball over, in his own territory. He's going to be a guy that, on third and 14 says, no, I'm going to throw this in the fourth row. I'm not going to try to force it down the middle of the field in double coverage and try to make a play. So, maybe Jarrett Garantano can prove that he's really trustworthy, but I think if you are Jeremy Pruitt at this point and you want a guy that's not going to make mistakes, not going to put your defense in difficult positions, it's hard for me to think that Criss will be the first guy out of the gate in Charlotte against West Virginia. We'll see if there's still a lot of football left to be played. But I also think, too, when you talk about the graduate transfer game, the simplest way to make sure that you don't ever get a graduate transfer again, especially at quarterback, is if you take one and then he never plays. So I think we'll see both of them this season, but I think to start, I'll be surprised if it's not Criss out of the gate.
You mentioned Jeremy Pruitt's desire to run the ball and control the clock in a game. That's going to be imperative in game number one against West Virginia. They're going to need to possess the ball and keep West Virginia's offense off the field if they're going to have a shot in that one. When you look at Tennessee's running backs, Pruitt's also said you really need 4 to 6 guys carrying the ball over the course of a game and over the course of a season. What is that depth like right now at running back for Tennessee? It seems like they have some pretty talented guys at the top of the depth chart.
They do. It's a lot of unproven guys, but I think they've got at least a trio that they're going to be able to rely on. You look at, obviously, Ty Chandler, who's a little bit smaller than the Jeremy Pruitt would like, but I think he's got a lot of promise, a big play guy. Tim Jordan is the guy that I think can really get some carries for them in that offense. But then the Michigan State transfer, Madre London, he's sort of more of the stereotypical back that Jeremy Pruitt is used to. I mean, ultimately, this offense is going to look a lot like what Alabama looks like. That's what he wants. Certainly downhill, run heavy, control the ball, but then obviously some spread concepts too. Tyson Helton has a background in that at Western Kentucky. They've thrown it around quite a bit. There's going to be some of those concepts, but this is going to be a more of a pro-style offense. He spent the last couple seasons at USC. And so Madre London is kind of more of that stereotypical back. He's 220 at this point, about 6'2". And I think he might be the guy that they get in short yardage. He might end up getting the lion's share of carries. We'll see how Jordan and Chandler, a couple of smaller bodies, hold up. But I think you're going to see, I think they'd love to find another one or two that they can trust in preseason camp. But that's one of the places where I think they've got some depth. Unproven guys, but all three of those guys can play.
If you had to pick one player on defense that stands to benefit the most from the switch to Jeremy Pruitt's defense on this roster right now, who is that one guy?
You got to go Jonathan Kongbo, I think. People made a big deal out of his position move. He's a guy who came to Tennessee, obviously, with a lot of hype, hasn't really produced a ton, but they really want to set him free. He's got a lot to prove, and he's going to be out of a three-point stance a lot more. I think you're going to see him in a two-point stance a lot more. But they want to just let him use his gift as a pass rusher. You know, on third and long, they want to set him free. I think he was a little bit tied down some in the previous system, and I think that's sort of the idea, is that, you know, Jeremy Pruitt, throughout his background as a defensive coach, he wants guys playing fast and being able to play without thinking. And if you tell a guy like Kongbo, a naturally talented player, just say, hey, go get the quarterback, man, do what you got to do, I think you're going to get a lot of results out of that. I think he's the type of guy that really we could see them start to tap into some of that potential this year and really get a big year out of him.
David Upp at The Athletic has been our guest. David, this has been great, and we hope this is the first of several visits with you on the show.
Terrific. Thanks,
definitely,
man.
Guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, man. David Upp of The Athletic. We highly recommend what will be a six-part series on Pruitt right now at The Athletic.
If you're a Tennessee fan, it's a must-read. I think it's required reading going into the Jeremy Pruitt tenure. It really gives you a good sense of who this guy is, and it's a guy that hasn't been all that open with the media. He really opens up to David in this piece with some of his quotes. So I think it's required reading for Vols fans.
I'm looking forward
to
reading it.